Right, everyone, come on in. Admit all. I change that name, not Ben. Welcome, everyone. Banshee is there. That is awesome. Turn the cams on, boys. Do. Okay. Happy Wednesday, everyone. Welcome to the call. Nice to see you all. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about some squatting. I saw a lot of you sent in some videos as well. We're going to look at the videos. I'm in my backyard tonight. It's a bit different than normal. In Ontario, we only get about 10 weeks a year where we can go in the backyard and do something like this. So I try to take advantage of it as much as I can. That's why we got this view today. So we know how these calls go. We're going to start off with just sharing some wins for the past month. I haven't seen a lot of you. I did see Vamshi's transformation. I thought that was pretty cool. I can update you guys a little bit on myself and some wins for me. I'm going to be at a fitness conference next week. It's called CanFit Professionals in Toronto. I've been presenting there for about a decade now. So I'm going down. I'll have four presentations there. It's going to be fun. I always like going to Toronto for that. And this year, my wife and one of my kids is coming with me. So that should be fun. They get to see me work live. So that's some wins for me. For the rest of y'all on the call, who else would like to share some wins in the last month? Go ahead, John.
So I just feel good, like continue getting stronger. Workouts are going well. Happy about it. I keep studying post-surgery PRs.
That's a good feeling.
It is.
I would say one of the easiest ways to set PRs in your training is to one of two options. One is always do a different exercise, or option number two, keep training. You can't get stronger if you don't work out. You can't win the lotto if you don't buy a ticket. You gotta keep doing the same thing. And the more you do it, eventually the better you get at it. So that's good to hear, John. Someone else want to share some wins? Rob, Paul, Bamshi, Mr. Soto, anyone?
Yeah, I could share some. I think incorporating it, cardio, and I noticed it more in the my markers with my Garmin and stuff, even HRV, overall wellness throughout the day, my walking, my posture, not just strictly the weight training. And it's like, oh my God, the treadmill, roll my eyes. Now it's kind of just incorporating it, making a habit, the end of each workout, leg workout, even walks, inclines, and just kind of putting in that time. I notice the sleeping quality, the wellness, the energy, the stamina throughout the day has actually gotten better, surprisingly. HRV has actually gotten up a few points and stuff, and it's been holding steady at a higher level than I've had before. So, and I attribute it to that. And then probably the carnivore diet too, that's been helping me kind of drop a couple of LVs so both combination of both has actually helped,
That's awesome.
honestly.
That's
Yeah.
good. I mean, sometimes people aren't fully aware that cardiovascular disease is the number one reason why our species dies. Like that's just what it is. CVD. Like eventually your heart gives out, eventually your lungs give out. So what is the most robust way to prevent that from happening or push that back as far as possible is to have a strong cardiovascular system. And the body is so adaptive that if you stress it a certain way, it adapts by getting better, which also means if you don't stress it, it doesn't adapt. And unfortunately, we live in the most comfortable time of our species ever. to get from point A to point B, we don't have to use our cardiovascular systems anymore. We don't. So it regresses. That's not good for health. So we can adapt really well if we do things. We also go the other way if we don't do things. So cardiovascular health should be very important for all men, all women, as we age, when we're young, for our whole lifespan. And then life gets a lot easier when you have good cardiovascular health. So that's good.
Oh, another thing to add to that too, I noticed that even throughout the last month or so, 6 weeks and so that I've implemented it, it's actually gotten better. So it's kind of like you said, putting in the work, telling my body, putting the giving it that demand, my body's been responding to it. It's been getting better. It's been more consistent in ticking up the miles per hour, working on the strides, like you told me with the metronome and stuff, all those little things and stuff. Just I noticed noticeably, it's like, hey, I could go 4.5, 5 miles an hour instead of 3.5 or four. So it's I've been gradually noticing that improvement.
And if you track your health with like an Oura ring or a Garmin watch or something along those lines, it's pretty cool to see it, like the long-term marks, like it's 6 months, 12 months, 2 years. Just little things tend to change. Your average resting heart rate tends to drop. So if your resting heart rate sits about 65, 68, then you start incorporating a healthier lifestyle with cardiovascular work. Then all of a sudden, 12 months later, your average resting heart rate's 59. Well, that's 6 to 7 beats less per minute, right? 24 hours in a day, a lot of hours in a year. Essentially, your heart doesn't have to work as hard to do its job. It's safe to say that you've just extended your life because you don't have to use your heart and your cardio so much. So I love the Oura ring. I like going back on my app and seeing where was I in 2022, 2023, where was my HRV scores, where were all these scores then? Introduce different cardiovascular training and then see what happens 6, 12, 18 months down the road. So that's good. I'll take one more and then we're going to get into today's topic. One other win. Bamshi, what do you got?
I lost the weight, right? I'm seeing a different perspective. Like, you know, I'm very sensitive to what in not in terms of allergies or anything, but I can exactly feel what's going on. Like, you know, when I eat a carb, I get energy. When I eat MCT oil or something, I get energy, right? When I don't walk, right, my digestion is poor. Like, I became very sensitive. Like, I'm having a different perspective, which is very good. I mean, that feeling is good that you can. You kind of have that hack into the biometrics. You have that sense of what's going. That's really great, actually.
It's wild once you become aware of these things, because then you can literally curate your lifestyle around what is optimal for your health. And if you're newer to the program or you've been involved with Muscle Intelligence for 1+ years, you know that our objective is to always optimize things for our health. What is the best thing for us to do? You should be able to talk to a stranger if you've been with us for a while and say, oh, these are the things that I do for me that makes me as healthy as can be. Bamshi, could be walking after you eat is better for my digestion. For some of us on here, maybe it doesn't make a difference. I can tell you that if I eat at 6 p.m. versus eating at 8 p.m., my resting heart rate in my sleep is elevated about 7 to 8 beats from 9 until about 3 in the morning. And only because we test these things, we try them out. And then once you know that, okay, this is not good, remove it, modify it, do the stuff that's good for you, then you can really optimize your health that way. So I'm glad you're figuring some other things out with digestion and walking. That's good, man. That's good. Okay, so we're on the call. Big crowd tonight. We are going to be discussing squats, you know, kind of the optimal way to do them, why everyone looks a little bit different. What to get out of the squats as well. So I can tell you a little story when it comes to squatting. That's kind of going to set the precedent here. When I was a younger man, squatting was something that people who didn't have baggy pants would do. Squatting would be something that people who didn't ride the bike for their leg strength would do. For me and my friends, we didn't really do leg day. Why would we do leg day? We wore baggy jeans. Why would we train legs? We would bike to the gym. So it wasn't the most popular thing that we would do. And we would tend to only do the squats once our upper bodies got foolishly larger in comparison. So then it was like, okay, now we need to start training the lower body. In the early days of training the lower body, with me and my friends, it was always who could lift the most without acknowledging it, the most with partial range of motion. Who could squat the most halfway, essentially. It wasn't until I got into athletics and then I got into powerlifting where the squat was a whole different world. In my performance, my first competition, I squatted very little weight and I deadlifted a lot of weight. I was always last when it came to squatting in the beginning, and I'd always catch up with other guys with bench pressing and deadlifting. And I said to myself, I have to figure out this squat thing because it's literally my Achilles heel in the sport. I figured out the best way to squat, the best frequency, technique, why my body looks a certain way versus other people's. I use that quite well. I play with different techniques, such as squatting every day, a max for over 60 days. I've squatted 5 times a week for 3 months. I've squatted 2 times a week for 6 months. I've played around with a lot of different things. I've used elevated shoes, like weightlifting shoes. I've used flats. I've used knee sleeves. I've used wraps. I've used neither. And I figured out a few things to the point where in one competition, I actually squatted more than I deadlifted. And that's not a good idea. Unless you're a super heavy lifter, that doesn't always look so good. But I figured it out and it got pretty good. One of the things that I used to do in the early days was I would take what everyone is supposed to do and say, that's how you're supposed to squat. Someone said everyone is supposed to look like this. Their hand's supposed to go here on the bar. They're supposed to go this far down. This is how they breathe. This is where the knee goes. And everybody has to look the exact same. So I would try that. I would look at the best squatters and look at their technique and try to mimic it. Well, who usually squats the most amount of weight in the gym or in powerlifting competitions? It's usually the heavier people. And the heavier people are the super heavyweights. They tend to look different. They're much thicker. They're much wider. They tend to have bigger bellies sometimes. They might not have a lot of shoulder flexibility or mobility. So they might hold the bar in a funny way. So I used to start by squatting by having my hands really wide. And I would really bend over when I would do a squat with a wide stance and push my feet back. And I just never, or push my hips back. I never got really good at it. And then I'd be at these competitions and I'd be looking at people. And all of a sudden I saw someone and he squatted a house, but he wasn't the super heavyweight. He was about my size, about my build, and he put his hands right tight to his shoulders, and his stance was much more narrow. And I talked to him after, and I said, "Hey man, like why do you squat like that?" He's like, "Oh, that's what works for my body." And I'm like, there's a specific way to squat for your body?" And he's like, "Oh yeah." He's like, "This works for my body. I can never do that. I used to get pinching in my hips." I was like, "You know what? I get pinching in my hips when I squat like that too." So then I started, trying to optimize my body and what is the best optimal position for my body. And that led me down to really digesting squatting techniques and figuring out what's best from person to person. And we're going to talk a little bit about that now. But before we get into that, I just want to go, there's only a few of us on the call here, so we can go person by person. Why do you squat? What do you want to get out of squatting? So I'll start with you, John, because you're first one on my photo here. John, why do you squat? What do you want to get out of squatting?
Well, I find squat does a lot of things. Squat helps my hip mobility. It gives me a lot of strength. You got to build a foundation. I squat because it feels good and challenging. It beats me up. I
Okay.
like the challenge.
Okay. Those are all very good reasons. You do it for flexibility and mobility. You do it because it's hard. You do it because it makes you stronger. Great. Good. Ken, is that how you pronounce your name? Kenne? If you could unmute yourself, I think you're muted. Also, welcome to the call.
There,
There we go. You're
I
there. I can hear you.
think. So I've tried a lot of different things in squatting, and I'm pretty much directed toward technique. I'm doing very little weight now. I've done a lot more weight historically, but I've had two knee surgeries, or one knee surgery and one knee rehab, one ankle that's jacked up, poor hip flexibility. So I'm trying to learn technique. And today I learned that, oh, you can squat for your body shape. And I'm obviously not like the typical bodybuilder weightlifter because I'm 5'10", I'm about 160 or 70 pounds. So I'm just trying to what works for me because I basically run through walls and it's like, oh, that's a bad idea.
Okay, perfect. Great. 5'10", 160, 170. I know exactly what your body kind of looks like when you would do a squat. I can picture it. But if you've got some differences on left and right side of the body, that's going to change how you do a squat. We're going to talk about that. Okay, that's good. Vamshi, what about you and your squatting?
Mobility.
You squat for mobility? That's why you squat?
Is one thing, like without getting injured in those moments.
Brother, you're super mobile. I remember you used to sit on the floor. Vamshi has very good mobility. We might even call it the Asian hip, where he can choose where he wants to squat. Wide stance, narrow stance, sit up and down. There's some people who nature just built them like that, and some people they're built the opposite. But you squat regularly to maintain that mobility, and then you load it to be strong in those positions. Am I right?
To build some muscle in quads.
And build the muscle in the quads. Okay, that's good. I was waiting for someone to say that, to build muscle. Okay, Paul.
Working towards a 1,000 pound club and squats one of the lists for that.
Okay, so you want to get strong. You use it for strength. Perfect. Good. Robert.
A couple of reasons because people, to prove that I can, because I'm the opposite. I'm like a giraffe, so people don't expect me to be able to squat. And I've got a bulged disc in my back, and it's held me back in the past. So partly it's a psychological thing, like to prove to myself that if I do it right, I can do it. I don't have to just drop an exercise arbitrarily. And also just for me, it's about size. Always had stretched ass legs, so I just put some size on them.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you got the short shorts. You might as well fill them out, right?
Got it.
Cool. Mr. Soto?
Yeah, I think a couple of things too, because I think the first one is the benefit you get from it, just even if you're doing light weights, is the full range of motion. Even if I'm squatting in the kitchen or in the garage or doing things, love that. The other thing is just the power through and the challenge of all the body parts coming together and stuff. All the stuff I do at the gym floor come together when I do the squat or like a deadlift. And I love that power through and that strength. Okay, how good did I get? And to challenge your body as a whole. And I love that. And I want to just start increasing and doing PRs and working on it. And I got some work to do, but I love the power through, the
When
strength.
you do an exercise in the gym, some exercises are classified as closed chain and some are classified as open chain. A closed chained exercise, simple form, is whatever exercise you're doing, there's an attachment to the ground and to you at the same time. These are usually seen as machines. So there'll be like a leg extension is closed chain, a leg press, closed chain. Something that you have to coordinate and control is considered or classified as an open chained exercise. When you put a barbell on your back and you do a back squat, that's an open chain exercise. There is a lot of coordination involved. You are then working against gravity to not fall over. Essentially, you're going to put your body in a position where your balance is challenged tremendously. You have a load put on your spine that's going to challenge spinal stability. And you're probably going to have a heavy load because it's bilateral, which means you can use both legs at the same time. And then you got to work against gravity to bring it back up after you go to a position where you're absolutely weak. Very challenging. That's a very challenging exercise. So that can be challenging physically and mentally, just having to focus. So I like that you guys are kind of all in the same mindset here. If you're looking for the challenge of the exercise, or you recognize it's hard for you to do too. Austin, I don't know if he's got me on in the background. Why do you?
Yeah,
There you
describe.
are. Why do you squat, brother?
because Greg tells me to.
Greg, of all the people, Greg with the 4 foot long legs, who Gavin has to drag his ass to the gym to get him to squat. Okay.
Hates it.
But in Greg's defense, a lot of you guys probably don't know this, but Greg has got one of the more wild sleeper builds I've ever seen. We did fitness testing, and Greg smoked everyone on power output on bikes, power output on water. Yeah. So he's got some strong wheels. I think it's just because they're 4 feet long. That's why his legs are so damn strong. But he doesn't like to squat, but he can move them pretty well. That's good. Dale, what about you? Why do you squat? Oh, it might just be on the background for Dale. Okay, that's fine. No problem. Okay, so we all got different reasons here. We squat for mobility and flexibility, we squat for strength. And then we squat for hypertrophy, or we squat because Greg tells us to. Well, let's take a look at different types of squats and different body types of what you would kind of get out of this as well. So first, let's take a look at the body types. Not everybody is built the same. Surprise. So let me go into here. We're going to pull up and minimize my face. And we're going to look at different hip structures. Where that will go. Google, Google, Google. There it is. Okay, can everyone see the screen here? So these are two different pelvises here. And if you can see the arrow that I'm pointing at, when you look at the one on the left, this position here, this is where the head of your femur, so your thigh bone, inserts. It goes into that hip socket. When you look at the one over here, this is someone else's pelvis. Same thing. The head of the femur goes into that position. I'm going to make this a little bigger. What do you notice about the structure of these two? Does anything stick out that's different from this to this?
One
Anyone?
looks more rotated, sort of, like the one on the left as I'm looking at it sort of seems more closed, and the one on the right, those up a bit where the thumbs are, looks more sort of rotated up and open.
Yeah, so you're talking about, so if you look up in here in the pelvis, so the front of the pelvis position here, that the bone that we all have, you can feel it's called your ASIS bone. It is really prominently forward. And if that was a bowl, it would be like pouring water out the front. When the one on the left, it's more of like a balanced bowl where the water would stay in balance. So someone on the left, when they do squat or squat variations, they are more likely to have a neutral pelvis in the bottom position because naturally they already have it. This person on the right, they are more likely to have a tilted pelvis, an anterior tilted pelvis. So what does an anterior tilted pelvis look like? You've seen this in the gym. We've seen the girls, sometimes the guys. By the way. So they're going to have more of this posture. So this posture here, so they're going to be tilted like this, probably towards the bottom of the squat, and the other person's going to be more like this, just naturally. So right off the bat, you can cue and you can try to change things and say, try this, but sometimes anatomy, it suggests other things are not changeable. So that can happen to a lot of people. If you get pinching in your hip, you're more likely to be more of an anterior tilted pelvis than a posterior tilted pelvis. But here's another thing I really want you to look at in the photo. Where the head of the femur goes into, this one here on the left, it's much bigger. That's a much larger space that's open. This one here, it's much more closed. Some people who have a open hip socket, the head of the femur goes in like this. And if it's an open socket, they can move the head of the femur or their femur leg in all these cool positions. They can go up, they can go down, all around. Someone with a more, and the other one there, I won't say deformed, but it's just not circular. It's closed off, it's lumpy at the top. They're going to, when they try to move their femur around, they're going to be limited in the positions. They're going to go click, I get stuck. here. I get stuck here. Oh, I'm good down here. I got all the space down here, but I don't have any movement up here. So what would that look like? Well, that would look like someone when they go to squat with a narrow stance and they go down into a narrow stance, they can maybe get to 90 degrees or less, and they might get pinching in their hip. So they can't go with a narrow stance on the squat. They might then try to go really wide on the squat. So they open up their feet and their knees are out and they go down and the same thing happens. Oh, geez, that hurts too. Well, what's the in between? They go into the in between, and all of a sudden, once they're in the in between position, they can go up and down, no problem. That is their optimal squat stance based on their hip anatomy. When someone from the left photo with the open hip, they can go narrow stance, they can go really wide stance, or they can go the in between. They can pick and choose whichever one they want. Those people tend to squat very natural and they never have to get taught. They're the people that say, like, I can go up and down, no problem. So the anatomy plays kind of a large role in the starting phases when it comes to squatting. And I'm a big believer in you don't force what's not there, but you got to do some questions and you got to do some assessments. So I'll take someone live for one-on-one sessions. I'll put them on their back and I'll move their legs around and we'll find the pinch. Ooh, that pinches. Yeah, we're not squatting in that position. Oh, open the hip here. How's that feel? Oh, it feels really good. That's where I need your knees to be when you do a squat. So for yourselves, you can always try just standing up, doing a body weight squat, narrow stance, go really wide stance, and then find the in between. Whichever one feels, people like to use the word natural. I would like to change that word from natural to unrestricted. Which position do you feel no restriction? Which stance? That is then going to be determined as your optimal stance. So let me show you another thing. So that's the pelvis, but what can also happen, the head of the femur changes things too. So this is someone whose femur head goes very horizontal and it sticks out. This one, it goes up and in. So because it goes up and in on someone, this person is not going to have a lot of variety to squat. So if you've got the head of your femur looking like this, and you got a acetabulum, which is this area here, looking like this, squats for you might even be out of the question. Anytime you try to do a barbell squat, it just initiates instant pain. And that's where a leg press or something else might come into play. But someone like this, these are your weightlifters. You're going to see Olympic weightlifters. They tend to squat very good. They have short femurs, usually long torsos, and their hip sockets look more like the photos on the left. So they can pick and choose anywhere they want to go. They can generate a lot of force. They don't have any restrictions. That's why you tend to also see some countries, such as China, dominate in weightlifting, and they have for decades on decades on decades. You're seeing countries, Scandinavian countries as well. They tend to do quite well when it comes to weightlifting. They also just tend to be better squatters naturally because of their anatomy. Now, this is not the rule of thumb. This is not like everyone falls into this category. But if you're more of an Irish descent, they call it the Irish hip, you would be more where you struggle because you don't have a lot of freedom of movement. And they also call it the Asian hip, where you have more freedom of movement to pick from. So right off the bat, sometimes your anatomy is going to dictate where you're going to have to put your feet to be able to do a squat anyway. Any questions on that so far? Okay, what if you got long legs, Chris? Great question, everyone. Sometimes people will think that having long legs determines if you can or cannot squat. That's not always the case when it comes to your leg length. What you have to have is the longer the leg is, the longer the lower limb, the longer the upper limb is, you usually need to match that with good ankle flexibility, ankle mobility. The more mobile the ankle is, the more the knee can actually track forward when you squat, it can bend more. If it can bend more and keep your whole foot on the ground, you have more balance. You're not going to fall over. Contrast, if you go on your toes, you're going to lose your balance. Or if you just go on your heels, you lose your balance. So the knee can track forward more. The knee can then close, which can then lengthen your quadricep muscles. So closed knee is a lengthened quadricep, which then allows you to contract the quadricep to get you back up. So having long legs does not necessarily mean you can't squat low. You would most likely just need more ankle mobility. So we can do a real cool test for everyone here to see if you would need more ankle mobility. So what I want everyone to do right now is stand up. I want everyone to stand up. And I want you to walk away from your screen. And I want you with flat feet on the floor, pick the stance that you like and just give me five body weight squats, seeing how low you can get. No warm up or nothing. How low can you get? How low can we go? That's interesting. Everyone's disappearing. Like, oh, where'd Paul go? Oh, there he is. Where's Robert? Oh, there he is. Okay. Yeah, okay. So we did that as a little drill. So now you have an idea how low can I go. Now what I want you to do is I want you to elevate something underneath your heels and then redo the exact same thing. So just watch me first. So I'm in my backyard. I have a cushion here. What I mean by heels is I just want maybe an inch to 2 inches of something underneath your heels like this. And then try to drop down into your squat and see if you can go any lower if you've got something underneath your heels. If you got a pair of shoes, you can put shoes underneath your heels. Just roll up a pair of sneakers or something. So after doing that, did anybody find that they could squat lower with something underneath their heels? Ken, good. Austin, I'm glad you didn't attempt that. Robert, was it any different for you?
So I've trained myself to go into a full Asian squat because my kids are Asian. So I can go sort of ass to grass and comfortably sit down in a full Asian squat, but it's noticeably easier with heels elevated.
Okay, so if you've got the hips to go really low, when you elevate the heel, did your knee move forward more? Was your knee able to track forward more?
I think that must be what it is because I always used to do a when I'd be front squatting in a narrower stance, I'd notice if I propped my feet forward, it just felt really good, stable. I don't know why, but
Paul, any difference for you?
no, not really.
Okay, so if you saw a positive change, then what that means is if you get some form of elevation underneath your heel, that is going to make up for the lack of ankle mobility, or it's just going to amplify the knees going forward anyway. For someone like Paul, if you didn't get any need for it, you probably have good ankle mobility already. Or you're a big hip break squatter. You just push your hips back regardless, either or. If you felt that, hey, I can get a lot lower, I can get more out of my squat elevating the heels, you now have a tool you can use in training, whether it's wearing a weightlifting shoe or a squat shoe specifically, or elevating the heels just a little bit. What that also does, it lets that knee track forward. So if you're in this program to put on muscle, the further you get that knee in front of the body, the more the knee bends and the quad lengthens, which then means the more you can contract it. So for anybody who wants to put on muscle, I want to take the knee joint and get it as far forward as they can to make the quadriceps do the most amount of work on a squat. So if you want to put on muscle on your leg, you want to squat more like that. If you want to lift the most weight possible, do not bias all of the quadriceps. If you elevate the heel too much and the knee goes too far forward, you're kind of taking out those big muscles in the backside. Does everyone know the correct anatomy term of those? Called bedonkadonks. So the further the knee is forward, the less bedonkadonk you can use when it comes to squatting. That's why power lifters tend to break and push the hips back, and why power lifters are rarely ever seen in jeans because they always bust the arse out of them. So for power, you want to move the most weight possible. You want to use your quads and your hams and your glutes. You don't want that knee going forward so much, but for bodybuilding, you do. And Ben was really good, and he was one of the first guys really to bring that to light. He combined the biomechanics with the objective of putting on muscle. Lee Priest was always like the godfather of quads, right? The quad father. Now, Lee Priest had a very long torso, very short little quads. He didn't need much ankle mobility because his legs were so quad. So he was very quad dominant anyway, without the biomechanics part. Ben comes in a decade later as a bodybuilder and says, oh, if I want to bias this muscle, I just need to manipulate these variables here. And then he became an extremely strong squatter, an extremely deep squatter, was able to put up good weight for a bodybuilder, and he built some of the greatest legs you've ever seen in the sport of all time. Of all time. And it's using that concept. Get that knee as far forward as you can. So if you want to put on muscle, get the knee forward. If you want to build strength, you don't have to bias it as much. Does that make sense to everyone? Good. So let's look at some videos here, and then I'm going to break down some of the stuff that we might look for in squatting and where it goes well versus doesn't go well. So I'm going to show you first off a few. Where is this here? No, we're not looking at those legs. Yes. Look at this. Don't need that. So if we're looking at this photo, this is a friend of mine, power lifter, also chiropractor. So when you look at his squat here, notice the photo on the far left compared to the photo on the far right. The depth, the deepness of the squat on the far left really has the hamstrings in contact with the calves. So the more hamstrings are in contact with the calves, the more these muscles are stretching. So the more work the quadriceps are going to have to do. If you compare the one on the furthest left to the one on the furthest right, the bending is not as much. This is a powerlifting squat. The objective here is to move the most weight possible. If I were to draw a straight line down from that bar, it goes behind the knee, just behind the crease of the calf and the hamstring. About probably 70 or 80% of the length of the leg is behind this line this way, and about 20 or 30% is in the front. What that means is the majority of the muscle behind the line is doing the work, and the muscle in front of the line is doing very little. So if I want my quadriceps to do more, I need it to look more like this one on the far left, or even the one on this one right here. So the bar goes here, there's more muscle mass being used on the front. So if we elevate the heels and we shift the knees forward, you're going to get more of a power or a bodybuilding style squat for quads to do the work versus a powerlifting squat like this. So your depth is really important as well. Let's look at some of the videos that I got from you guys. And we're going to see if it meets some of these requirements here. So we're going to go with Vamshi first. So we make this a little bigger. Okay. So before I even do this, Vamshi said his goals were to put on muscle mass and keep his mobility from a strength perspective. Keep strength in his mobile position. So let's watch it at real-time speed. Good. So the first thing I always ask myself when I look at a squat video if someone sends me, the very first question, is he going to hurt himself if he continues to do it like that? When I look at Vamshi and I see that squat, I can honestly say no. He can do that forever. He's not going to hurt himself. He's not using a technique that would suggest something's going to snap. So he's going to hurt himself? Absolutely not. Now, is he going to put on as much muscle as possible using that technique and strengthen the flexibility he already has? Well, Bamshi, I know you can squat lower than that with your body weight. I know you can squat a lot lower than that. But I also know when you go lower to a certain point, the pelvis tucks underneath you. That's for all of us. That's called a human rest position. That's not a barbell back squat position. When you continue to go lower, loaded with a barbell, and then your pelvis goes underneath you, what happens at the low back, L4, L5, S1, is those vertebrae, they bend. The disc that's in between, the pressure pushes on it posteriorly. So when people hurt their back squatting, they've usually lost position of the pelvis in the bottom of the squat. So if I had seen his pelvis really tuck underneath him in that position, I would say if he continues to load that, he could delaminate the disc over time or create something much more long-term pain related with the low back. Not going to hurt himself. But Vamshi, let me ask you, can you go lower in a barbell squat, keeping your pelvis in the neutral position that I saw in that video?
Probably I can do that, but I always have this fear, like I might do a butt wink when I initiate the position at the bottom. Like when I try to go up, I've seen in some videos, like I do the butt wink, like the one that you are just explaining. So I don't initiate with my quads.
Okay, so you have a fear of the butt wink and getting hurt. If only there was a way we could watch ourselves work out and then say, is my butt winking? If only there was some mechanical device where it could watch me and then I could watch the device to see. Video. That's right. What you can do, Vamshi, is within a training session, literally video all of your sets. And after each set, look at it. It's not your first time around the block. You've been training for a while. You know what it looks like and you know what you're fearing. So you could do a set, empty bar or 135, your first set, 135, bang out your set, watch the video. Hey, butt looks pretty good. Add 20 pounds, 155. Look at the video. Butt looks pretty good. Keep going up. 185. Okay, this is where I start to get a little bit worried. Is my butt gonna wink? Do the 185. Look at the video. Hey, butt's still good. I'm great. 200. Do a set of 200. Oh, it's starting to move at 200. Guess what? The deficiencies will always show up on the extremes of both ends. What I mean by that is the pelvis position is really hard to maintain when you're overloading, when you're loading too much for your body to handle, and when you're underloading and you can't create stability. If you put an empty bar on my back and you get me to show you how to do like a perfect squat, it looks not very good. I need some load to force my body to stiffen and stabilize. So if you give me 135, I can make it look pretty. But empty bar, I always look kind of goofy. So I never demo empty bar squats, you know, in presentations and stuff because I need the stability. So the extremes will show the incompetencies or the technique breakdown. But you don't know unless you watch it. Now, with a butt wink at an empty bar, Bamshi, it's not enough to hurt yourself. It's too light. It's just like if you sit down and have a conversation with a friend or family member and you're in the deep body weight squat, a human rest position, and your pelvis is tucked, the load on that is your body weight. It's nothing. You're fine. You're not going to get hurt. But there's a capacity that everybody has. And it might be the 200, 300 pounds, whatever it is, where if you round the back in that position, you can get into trouble. So you can squat lower. I've seen you do it. If you want to get stronger in those positions, you might just have to modify the amount of weight you're lifting and always go back to the video and watch the video. Does that make sense? Cool. John, you want to say something? Oh, you're just off mute. Okay. So that's Bamshees. Let's look at another one here. Do, 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 do. Get out. Let's get out. Let's try pressing escape. See what happens. Oh, no. Aha, X. There we go. Okay. So, John. Hey, John, this is a very common thing that I see. I'm going to be able to help you out real soon. Let's watch in real time speed. Move this thing out of the way. I like that breath. I like that brace position. Okay. So, looking at John's squat, the first question I always ask is he going to hurt himself if he keeps doing it like that? The answer is no. I don't see anything there that's going to make him hurt himself. I don't see him losing his balance. I don't see the bar helicoptering. I don't see any rotation happening there. I don't see his pelvis going underneath them or hyperextending the other way. But what's different? What does John do different in his squat that Vamshi doesn't do? What aids are is he using?
Heel lift.
At the heel elevation. Yeah. John, you have a massive heel elevation. Usually as men, we like it when other people tell us something about us is massive. But in this scenario here, I'm going to suggest that you reduce the mass that you have and you go down to a medium, be a medium-sized guy. It's okay. Let me tell you the reason why. The amount of elevation you have forces you right up on your toes. It's forcing you on your toes. So the amount of force you have in contact with the ground is much less. It's minimal. The more of the whole foot can be in contact with the ground, the more amount of force you can press into it to get more out of it. So if you want to push heavier weight, you got to get the midfoot and the ball of the foot. So the midfoot, we're looking to get this bad boy in contact. Right now, all your weight's up here on your toes. So you're not going to be as strong if you can't press through this. So from a strength perspective, I would say if those are 25-pound plates, if the gym's got 10s, I would try 10s. And you can buy weightlifting shoes that sometimes are, they've got these huge heels on them to like 3/4 inches or even like a full inch. I call them the heels, the high heels. Some people need them, some people don't.
I
I
have
think
them, but
you have them, yeah?
yeah, I
they
have
don't
them.
make them that big.
I've got tiers. I've got tier Olympic weightlifting shoes.
Yeah. Okay. So the tier ones, those are 3/4 inches. The Adapowers are about a 0.6 of an inch. So if you use the tiers, they're smaller than that 25-pound plate that you have. So that's a good that's probably a better shoe for you to use. Now, what I would also suggest is when you have the heel elevation, you have to consciously insist on your knee traveling forward. Let's go back to the video here. And your shin is it's quite vertical in that bottom position. I like for people to have a similar shin and torso angle. A similar, it doesn't be identical, but similar. So if you have a little bit less of a heel and you encourage the knee to travel forward more, you're going to use these quadricep muscles much more. You're going to close this angle of hamstring and calf. You'll be matching shin and torso angle, and you'll have to use more of your quadriceps to do the work. So for you, that's what I would do. I would suggest to go back to your tiers if you got those. Encourage the knee to go forward to get more out of your squat. Is that fair? And I always suggest that whatever you can do, body weight, bottom position, control, as you add the bar, it shouldn't change that much. As you add weight, shouldn't change that much. So if you can't control a barbell with a weight on it, with good leverages, good position, you might need to take a step back, might need to reduce the weight. A lot of times I see technique changes as you add weight. I would rather just see the bar speed change as it adds weight, not the technique. Okay. Look at another one here. Okay, Mr. Soto. So Elias here. Let's watch in real time speed. Says to himself, I'm not happy with that depth. Oh, that's better. Now he's feeling. You notice the bar speed's a little different on the second one because it's harder. It's harder in that range. It's a harder range of motion because more muscles have to do more work. I really like the reset with the bracing and the breath each time. Now, I'll just hit right to it. Is he going to hurt himself lifting that way? No. Is he getting good range of motion to put on muscle? Yes. Is he getting good range of motion to build strength? Yes. Is the setup opt? No. If you want to lift the most weight possible, you want to use the least amount of energy just to get the bar off the rack. So just to get the bar off the rack, it should be a very simple up, couple steps out. When we watch this one here, we got to lower that rack height. Because for you to stand up, you're hitting the things as you go back and forward. So you're almost like on your toes. When you got to go to rack, it's the same thing.
Yeah, it was pretty high. Yeah.
Yeah, it's too high. You're like Snoop Dogg high, but not that high. So what I suggest to everyone is the bar height should be about the collarbone. You set at the collarbone height. So when you reach out to grab it, you're grabbing it like this. When you put the bar on the traps and you stand up, you move the bar 2 inches about and you clear that sucker. And stand up, take your two steps, one, two, and then you're good to go. If you're in between the two pegs in the gym, always go with the lower one and just widen your feet as you unrack the bar. That makes you a little bit shorter. Contrast to if you go with the height a little bit higher, you have to narrow your feet and you have to go up on your toes to unrack the bar. So you'll be more stable and it'll take less energy to go with the opposite where the bar is a little bit lower. Does that make sense, everyone? Okay, good. Those look good, look good, look good. Okay, Austin's here. So Austin's got the heels elevated. Austin, have you ever had any lower limb issues, ankle sprains or anything? Breaks?
No, but tightened Achilles tendons run in my family. I've been
Gotcha.
walking on my toes since I could walk, so it's like three other members of my family.
So I can see that in your squat, there's something restricted in that area. I also see you got great calves, man. Right?
Yeah.
Those baby calves are nice.
They
So
don't grow like out, so from behind they look small, but in the front, I guess sideways they look small, but in the front they'll touch together.
yeah.
However, that walking on my toes my whole life developed them.
So no, I can totally see that there's a little restriction happening at the lower limb. If you have Achilles tendinopathy or some form of restriction in there, I don't suggest you overload that with a barbell. You could do other things off to the side, but I wouldn't say to you force and push your knee forward because I can
Okay.
see that there's a restriction in there.
Yeah, the ankle never hurts. It's like the lower back I'm more worried about. It's just like my family, I guess, like our heels just pull up. The doctor said when I was young that they're just genetically shortened, but never had ankle pain before.
Yeah.
I do get kind of worried with heavier squats. I think it builds up to like 355 with like the plate slipping or something. So I did try to find weightlifting shoes, but the highest heel I could find was like Adidas Lee Stung or something. It's only 1 inch, and that plate I'm using is about 1.5 inches tall. So the weightlifting shoe wasn't a good work for
You
me.
find it easier to front squat? Like, can
Way
you
worse.
way
Yeah.
worse on a front squat? Goblet squat? Safety squat, bar squat.
Easier. I always have to elevate the heel though, or else my chest just folds down, faces the ground.
And you squat because Greg tells you to, right?
Yep. He
So
knows I hate it.
you can still get benefits with the way you're doing it. If you wanted to put on a whole bunch of muscle, you would just benefit more from using other machinery.
Okay. We've been doing that. It's like since December, because I pulled my groin and then had a shoulder impingement, hurt to hold the weight. But I think he's just a little worried about like my balance and mobility, just locking into machines and not doing anything. What'd you say earlier when you're only connected by one point?
Open chain.
Yeah, it's not doing many open chain exercises. There's another thing that, makes it really difficult with the tight Achilles is any type of split squat work. So like lunges or Bulgarian split squats, those are always brutal as well.
I mean, that's where I was just going to go next. I would say I would do more unilateral work, but if anything beats up the ankle because of the Achilles tendon, then you got to play and you got to find something to
Yeah.
kind of,
It's
but.
like the ankle doesn't hurt, but I think it like went up the chain. So now that I have a desk job the last 8 years, I'm dealing with all these lower back issues that I didn't have in college.
I
And
did
that's
want
where those things
to,
hurt.
I did want to go over and show everyone someone who does one of my guys who does really good technique with resetting his brace on all of his reps. Anytime you want to wear an aid like a belt, remember, fellas, we don't suck anything in. You don't make belts as tight as possible. You do the opposite. You want to actually push out. So what you want to do is you want to take a breath in through your mouth and fill your belly. Make your belly as big as possible. It should be like, it should expand this way. So you want to expand your six pack, your side pack, and your backpack. And what happens is you create more intra-abdominal pressure. That pressure pushes out. That's what stabilizes the spine. And if you do it every single rep, you can do a double, hold it, one, two, air in, hold it, one, two. You're always going to be in a good braced position, but you don't want to be sucking in. And sometimes you get a Velcro belt and you'll see a video of people urge to suck in. That's where I've seen people tweak their back more than pushing out. So I'll just show you a video of one of my guys here. I drew this up earlier. He's
Greg
glued.
said pushing against the belt and abdominal pressure is one of the reasons why the fatter strongmen still have visible abs at a higher body fat percentage.
You do have to contract. Yeah, you got to contract
Yeah.
out. So here's one of my guys. He sent me this video today. So I want you just to walk. I'm gonna point out a handful of things that he does really well here. He unracks the bar, waits, and then walks it out. So he doesn't rush anything. There's nothing rushed here. He's under the bar. He clears it by about 2 to 2.5 inches. He waits, takes the steps, one, two, and then adjusts that third one. Knows exactly where his stance needs to be. He's wearing a belt. Watch his whole torso for every rep. Pulls his head back, fills the belly, hits his depth, comes up, resets his air. You just saw his head move. Up, air out, air in, resets, drops down again. So, from a powerlifting perspective, he's going to what we call the required competition depth. If he wanted to be more bodybuilder style, I would drop the plates and I'd have him go a little bit lower to put on more muscle mass. And it's easy for him to re-rack it because he clears it because he's, 2 or 3 inches below when he unracks the bar anyway. So if you're worried about, tweaking the back, pulling the back on some of the squats, own the setup, know where your feet need to go, reset your brace every rep when it's heavy, or try to do a couple breaths or a couple reps on one or two breaths at a time as well. And that'll keep you stable when you're going through your squats.
Thank you.
Very welcome. Very welcome. Robert, we don't have time to get to your squat, my friend. I apologize. I have to get off this call at 7. I've got two kids waiting for me to make them dinner. I told them they had to fend for themselves and they haven't. So, gentlemen, thank you so much for the call tonight. Lower hand. Was that my hand that was up? Was there a question? I'll answer one. I need to run. Oh, John is leaving. Okay. So yeah, I got to run tonight, boys, myself. So thanks for coming on the call. If you have any questions or you want a little bit of feedback on something, just shoot me a message in the WhatsApp group personally. And I'll just, when I got a free moment, I'll reach out to you guys. Sound good?
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks,
Awesome.
Chris. That was great.
Awesome. Enjoy the rest of your month.
Yeah.